This is Brad James with the Be Educated Show. Today, I've got a very special guest from a very similar industry to all of the educators out there. In fact, I would call him a teacher. He would probably call himself a teacher. He's going to share some great stories about how he got to where he is, things he's learned along the way, and how he's been dealing with this whole blended learning model in the last year. So take a listen on the other side of the introduction. We'll see you there. Welcome back to another episode of the Be Educated Show, where we talk about innovative education, especially tying bees, ecosystems, outdoors, creative learning, all that cool stuff. And I have a really special guest with me today, a friend of mine. He's known me for about, 4 years, 5 years?
Maybe a little bit longer than that, actually.
Maybe even a little bit longer, yeah. I have Anthony Iraki. He is a Parks and Rec professional, author, speaker. You name it, he's doing it, he's figuring it out, and he's definitely a thought leader in the space. So how are you doing today, Anthony?
I'm great, man. I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate it. And I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see all the things that you're doing. Happy to see that Bee Pods is still going. Like you said, we've known each other for a number of years, way back when I worked for the city of Milwaukee. I do believe we ran some of the programs, and you had a Bee Pod at our Nature Center. And people mm-hmm. really liked it. And it was kind of that whole, you know, urban farming component. We had you, we had urban chicken farming, we have gardening, we had all these programs. So it was a lot of fun. So I'm glad that we could connect again a few years later.
Yeah. So as you can see, if you're listening to this, Anthony knows all about what we do, which is why I thought it would be extremely important to have him on here, especially because he's taken and grown over the years in his professional life and learned along the way, being put in the grinder, having gone through changes in career paths, having shifted, pivoted, all the above. And if you're an educator in any sense of the word, Anthony is a rock star at this. And before we dive in, I just want to shout out, if you want to learn more about him, go to anthonyinparks.com. That's his personal site. He's got some great blog posts on there. We're going to talk about a couple of them today. But specifically, if you want somebody who's figuring it out, especially right now, it is 2021, COVID is still real. Anthony's figured out a lot of this stuff. And so he's going to share with us a couple stories about how he's done that and how he's learned to navigate that over the last couple of years, as well as maybe some things that are coming up, right?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Some teasers.
Maybe we'll see. All right. So, hey, do me a favor. Tell everybody, like, how you got into parks and recreation, how you got into this whole outdoor education space. What's your background, man?
I mean, Parks and Rec chose me. So I actually grew up, it's really cool. I grew up on a little four-cabin, mid-century modern resort in Coldwater, Michigan. And growing up, we had a general store, cabins we rented out, fishing, boats, tackle, gear. There was a gas pump, but that was before I was born, on the lake. And so I spent my whole life just in that, you know, camp outdoor environment, running around the woods, swimming. And it really helped develop that sense of hospitality in me as well. You know, seeing my parents take care of the guests and customers, being a part of that from a young age, and just seeing, you know, people having fun in the outdoors, in my community, literally in my own backyard, and then also enjoying it myself. And so as I grew up, there was really no question about what I wanted to do. I wanted to work for the recreation department. And so, you know, I was a lifeguard, and then I became the lifeguard supervisor. Went from there. I went to college, worked in recreation, went and joined the YMCA, found out you could have a full-time career at the Y. And I wound up moving to Baton Rouge, Louisiana for a couple of years, which was a ton of fun right after college, SEC football. The food was amazing. The people were friendly. You know, the whole environment, it was going from the Midwest. It was warm year round, you know, outdoor pools in December and January. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So but I wanted to be back closer to my family. So I applied all over the Midwest, landed a job in Milwaukee, worked for the Y here for a number of years, and then took a position with Milwaukee Recreation, which is where you and I met. And that was my first, mm-hmm. you know, exit out of kind of the nonprofit, you know, recreation. You know, you think of Y Boys and Girls Club, you know, the kind of like national, more to the local rec departments. And so that's mm-hmm. where I really learned to, you know, learn about the different aspects of the field, got to do stuff outside of aquatics, which I really loved. And then since then, I brought in my experience in the metro area with a few different positions. And really, I kind of have touched every facet of the industry. I mean, parks, virtual seniors, community centers, anything you could think in parks and recreation, I've had an element in it. And so I think it's great, you know, being able to give back and have that. And also today, talking with educators and, you know, information for them, Southeast Wisconsin has community recreation and education. So it's a little bit different, where we're not traditionally through a village or a municipality. We're actually through more of the school district. And so I work with teachers, I work with educators and individuals who have ideas for programs and plans, and I help them get their program off the ground, you know, develop a structure to it in terms of a space. Maybe they don't understand how it's different from teaching and doing something in community education in terms of time length, information, the level people are at, working with more of adults, really, less so with children and students. And then really building out a
series. We're going to come back to that one at some point. I want to hear more about the differences, like, between those two, because my experiences are probably a little different than yours when it comes to that. But great stories in terms of lifelong learners, right?
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. It's a completely different skill set at times. And then, like, when you and I worked together, right? So you had your B-Pods, which I thought was a fantastic opportunity to support a local small business that's doing something really cool, that's supporting a much larger initiative in terms of, you know, the bees, and then also bring something new to people that maybe they wouldn't have experience in. Like, I, you know, me personally, it's like, wow, maybe I would love to know more about beekeeping. It's only something I've seen on TV or, you know, TikTok these days, but here's a chance to get my hands dirty. Even if I don't buy the bee, you know, the bee pod set, it's something new that I can say that I did. So that was an awesome collaboration. We had a lot of fun with it, and I just kind of kept that momentum going through the years. So, yeah.
So what types of, like, I mean, since you've been all over the place, maybe you can share some insights as to big takeaways you learned from, you grew up in the Midwest, you right here, like, you grew up in Milwaukee, right?
Michigan, Coldwater, Michigan.
Oh, Michigan. But then, so then you went down to New Orleans and then you came back. And so there's got to be a huge difference in culturally, like, the difference between how systems and education work down there versus, say, in the Midwest, right? Specifically with recreation. I mean,
well,
so I look at Parks and Rec as, like, the greatest way to survey different ideas, because, I mean, without Parks and Recreation, our communities literally would be houses and buildings, streets, infrastructure, water. And what Parks and Recreation brings is, like, they go, no, look, we're creating spaces, we're creating opportunities for activity and engagement and community. And so I imagine through your experiences, you've learned both through private nonprofit recreation, but also public recreation, different ways that, like, hey, in New Orleans, this is how things work, then it's different here, and I brought that back. Or vice versa, when you went down there from Michigan.
Yeah, so just to correct you real quick, it was Baton Rouge, not New Orleans.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I can't really speak on the Big Easy. I had some fun down there, but I didn't work down there. But so Baton Rouge, yeah. You know, the Midwest, it is different. You're going from the Midwest, very culturally definitive, down to, you know, the Deep South, culturally definitive. And then you're throwing in Louisiana into the mix. And then it's like, you know, a whole other element of culture within the Deep South. And it's one of those things too, where it's almost, it felt like, you know, kind of you're in, like, a more of, like, a European city at times than you were maybe something you'd find in other Southern states. But yeah, you know, the one constant was that despite, you know, the cultural differences and the historical differences and everything that, you know, had happened in the past up to that point and currently, you know, it was still an equalizer amongst the community, you know, working for the Y down there, working hand in hand with BREC, which is the Park and Rec Commission down there in East Baton Rouge Parish. You know, a fantastic organization, by the way, gold medal winning. We worked with them to run some of their pools in the summer. We did their staffing, and I think that collaborative partnership really, I think it still exists today. I'd have to find out. But, you know, it was across everything. You know, people came together through Parks and Recreation. And that's something that you see is a bit more global, that, you know, you go to any park in a diverse city or community and see people enjoying similar activities and sharing that space in the same way. And so I think that moving across the country, that was something that really allowed me to experience that, where it was something familiar in a very unfamiliar place, if that makes sense. And yeah, I mean, it was great. I think that, you know, I think that there'll always be some differences between the two regions of the United States. Like, you can't get away from that, but just knowing that, like, one specific industry itself operates in a similar manner and brings people together, I think that's something really special.
That's interesting. So if you're listening, so basically what you're saying is that it doesn't matter necessarily where you're at. There's the same synergy and ethos, like, of why these things exist in terms of equalizing opportunity and community.
Right.
At the same point in time, the cultural differences are maybe the way you have to look at it, probably a little differently. I'm sure you went through a little bit of culture shock going from Michigan to Baton Rouge.
You know, it totally was. There is a synergy to it. There is, I mean, think about it, like, who, you know, if you like being outside and going for a walk in a park, or, you know, I've talked about this before too, in terms of, like, you know, if you're having a bad day, like, you go and sit on, you know, you maybe sit under a bench or something, you're just kind of outside, like, thinking through your life, or taking your dog or your kids to the playground, or going to a pool, or all these different things. It's just kind of something that, you know, if you don't enjoy the outdoors, you just don't enjoy the outdoors, right? There's people that don't like being outside. And that's
which I don't understand, but
that's, yeah. But, yeah, you know, like, you know, if you go to some place, like, you can still find, like, that same thing where it's like, yeah, like, being in a park, just being in recreation programs, learning something new, you know, it really is a great thing. And so, as much as we are different at times, locally, nationally, even globally, we're all still very consistent. And that's something you see, too, with, you know, the National Park and Rec Association does a lot of work with the National Park Associations for Canada and Mexico. And I know both of those. I know the woman who was the director for Mexico, I do believe she was at the NRPA conference in Baltimore. And I think some people from Canada were, and if not, I've seen the collaboration come out in their press releases. But even just the World Urban Parks, you know, that's a whole other thing that exists as well too. And, you know, you think about what you're doing with, you know, again, with, like, the B-pods and everything. And again, that's a global issue, and there's avenues to explore that. And there's avenues to have local impact on a global issue. So, you know, anybody, I mean, well, not anybody, but you would know where in the country a B-pod system could be set up. Right. So you could take that.
Yeah.
You could be national with it. And
yeah, I mean, we're in 32 states. So, like, I understand, and we're in Canada and Mexico too.
Nice.
So, like, it's one of those things where I guess one of the things that I want our listeners to hear is that, hey, look, often, especially right now, we feel like we can't, or we're isolated and we're on our own and we're stuck in this rut. But understand that part of the beauty of the parks and recreation system that Anthony's sharing is that, one, it's a resource, right? It's a huge resource that I think often educators, especially in schools, public schools in the U.S., don't tap into enough in terms of finding ways to work with or leverage the tools and programming you're putting together. But also beyond that, I think it's one of those things, it's a model of cooperation that I don't think people give enough credit to. Because if you look at it, because I've been on some of those calls and you've shared stories in the past. I mean, you just shared some where there's legit communication and cross-programmatic communication and cross, like, departmental communication, because all of these things work as an ecosystem. They're not siloed as much as they used to be, unless I'm misunderstanding you.
No, they're not. They're definitely not. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. There's a lot of opportunity to build, you know, use outdoor spaces, outdoor classrooms to connect kids to nature. You know, Atiyah Atkins, somebody that I talk with on Let's Talk Parks, she has an episode where we talk about the latent potential of urban parks and, you know, working with youth in the cities that maybe don't have as much green space around them, but you know, you might think, well, let's take them to a nature program or a farm or something, and it's impactful to them, but it's not as lasting as, say, just taking them around to their local parks and their local areas to build that sense of conservation at home, which is a very abridged, summarized version of that podcast, and people should definitely go listen to, because she has a lot of really fantastic things to say. But yeah, I think as, you know, as educators, just you like partnering with your local parks and recreation department and, you know, focusing on health and social and emotional wellness and equity and all these different things, it's a great conduit to work hand in hand. And I think that that's where I am a bit blessed and fortunate working in Milwaukee. Well, the Milwaukee metro area is that, you know, we are through the school district originally. So, you know, I can work with educators hand in hand, and I can have conversations with them and set things up and, you know, maybe talk to them about what green space we have in the village, or come in and talk to their classroom, or do these different things and really be a resource for them as well. But if that's not something that exists where you are locally, it's worth exploring. And I think sometimes the challenge between districts and municipal parks and rec is a space sharing one, or maybe the recreation staff at the village or city hall really only talk to the AD or the scheduler because it's about gym space, it's about field space. But, you know, have a conversation, you know, reach out to those programmers and have a conversation with them about how they can work with you in your classroom, or work with you to offer some programs, you know, during community hours in the evenings or the weekends to share your message and passion, or a program you have, or an idea to impact your community. I can promise you that recreation programmers, we're busy, but a lot of times we're busy doing the same things. It's a very seasonal industry. You know, it's very structured in terms of when we hire, for what positions we hire. And so the opportunity to work with somebody new on a fun and engaging idea is typically always welcome.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, so you talk a lot about programs and all this stuff, and you wrote one of the articles that we were going to talk about is how to make virtual programs pop right now, especially in the age of homeschooling, not necessarily having the team sports in a gym or those group gatherings over the last year. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could share some insight on some of that.
Yeah, you know, I've been operating in the blended virtual space for quite some time. And in aquatics, it's been in existence because, the Red Cross has really been pushing it for a number of years with a lot of programs. And so, you know, people have been taking things virtually, watching videos, doing different things, assessments prior to coming and getting that hands-on component. But we really took that leap this year that we saw with COVID, where a lot of people were at home. And so a lot of people jumped into the virtual space during this time. It was very crowded. It was very, you know, full of everything, but nobody really knew what was happening. When were we going to get back? People were at home. They're trying to engage, trying to balance watching Tiger King between their kids' schoolwork and all these other things. And so, we learned a lot of lessons along the way, but something I found with, you know, what you can move virtually, but you don't want to lose that personal piece. And so the people that I found to have the most success, you know, us included, were people that had, you know, they had a relationship on the front end. So your yoga instructor is suddenly going virtual, right? Or, you know, suddenly like you're trying to do all these different things, but you can't just put content out there and expect people to come to it. It's like trying to start a YouTube channel and wondering why nobody's watching.
Right.
Trying to start a podcast and like, why isn't anybody listening to this? And so, you know, you do have to start, it's a relationship piece. And so if you're going to do something virtually, you really need to focus on building and fostering relationships. And that's where, you know, utilizing your social media, if you have whatever you have, utilize that as a way to engage, as a way to let people in, to see behind the scenes, to have conversations with you, to have access. So they feel like they start to get to know you. And, you know, like let people know why you're doing this. You know, people can definitely sense the intention behind what you do. And it's very evident if you start creating content and you're just out for monetization right away, or you just want to make money, people pick up on that because it'll feel sterile. But if you're out to build a relationship and actually share what your passion is and what you want to give back with, then they'll sense that as well. And so start with utilizing your social media and your network. Definitely build your connections, let people know what you're doing, utilize those resources, maybe tease some stuff, let people in behind the scenes so they can see. People always love like a mystery, what's going on. And then once you have it, it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of giving people access in an area that they feel comfortable. So if you have a podcast, maybe you also upload it to YouTube, or you share clips on Instagram, or you know, you do any number of things. If it's, you know, what tools and resources are you going to have? And then building a sense of community. I think that that's the biggest thing, is people really lost a lot of that sense of community. I know I did. I have through this, because, you know, I have friends that haven't left their house and still won't leave their house until they get the vaccine. And I have people I haven't seen and I haven't traveled, and acquaintances that, you know, we would meet up for different hobby groups. And so if you're going to go through this virtual environment, how can you recreate that? How can you make people feel belong, like they're a part of it? And, you know, how can you kind of brand yourself personally as that person that people can trust and be a thought leader in this space as well? And I think that just building that up too. And if it's something is, you know, like creating a logo for what you're doing, or if it's, you know, maybe you design something that you like and you send out, you know, stickers. You can get 10 stickers for $9 on Sticker Mule all the time. They're always running deals on that. If it's, you know, having,
we do a lot of printing of stickers for people.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's definitely like, yeah, people like it. You know, I love stickers. I have a ton that I'm always doing exchanges with, and then thinking locally and hiring globally. And so, you know, how can you impact your local community? But the virtual environment offers a global platform. And so maybe,
if
it's something that you're doing and putting out there and building a community, but if you know somebody else that has reach, working with them too, to say, hey, I have this platform. I think what you're doing is great. You know, you're the expert here. I think people could share it. Like, do you want to collaborate? And do you want to get this message out and grow from there? And so, but the virtual environment, I know I talked a lot, but it's all about the relationship. The biggest component is the relationship. I definitely feel like that's the most important thing. And even if you have, you know, even if you start and you share, like, I know if I share something and two people like it and comment and talk to me and say, wow, I took something from this, I will respond to them. And I will be so thankful that whatever it was I created, somebody found value in it. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. And that's how you really build a community around your ideas and how you want to have impact.
So how are you, you know, I know you're in charge of recreation, where you work in Whitefish Bay. How are you coaching maybe some of your program, I don't know what you call them, but your program leaders or your coaches, or how are you training them on that whole like virtual relationship building? Because I'm sure, because Parks and Recreation hasn't stopped. It's just evolved.
Yeah, it definitely has evolved. And I mean, those are conversations on the front end. You know, we have a really successful senior virtual fitness program. And so we had some senior classes that we had to go virtual with, because, you know, it's that population's vulnerable population. And so, but people wanted to still really be able to, you know, really be able to, you know, engage in their health and wellness and fitness. And so I had two young women that I work with who are fantastic. Rachel and Olivia are just phenomenal team members in the department. And they really stepped up over the initial lockdown with, you know, doing just some free classes that we were doing, just putting it on YouTube, some daily workouts and whatnot. And then we eventually switched to the virtual as well. And it was a conversation about, you know, these are people who were coming. These are people who might not know you. They were working with another instructor who, you know, wasn't doing the virtual program. And so it's like, you know, they've been around and this is what they're looking for. And I know that you can definitely be the resource they need. And I think it's important, you know, start the class with introducing yourself and your experience. And, you know, it's okay if you, you know, have a little bit of a conversation on the front end or the back end, and then you get into the workout. And, you know, be mindful as well too, that we are recording these. And so people can, you can sign up and you can do them live, but they're also on demand, just because the time doesn't work for anybody. And, you know, if you want to put messages in there to everybody who isn't watching live, just so they know that they're seen and heard. And so I think that remembering that your audience is accessing your virtual content, it's at any hours of the day. So somebody might, like this conversation, right? Somebody might listen to it after you post it, but whoever is listening to it is going to, somebody else might listen to it a year from now. And we have to be mindful of that person as well. So hello, you know, person a year from now, 6 months from now, I'm glad you're here. I hope you're finding value in this. I really hope that you are successful in what you do. But you're just as important as the people who have already listened and just as important as anybody who could potentially be on the call listening to us live. So I think that that different way of thinking is very important.
That makes sense. And I think for a lot of educators out there, I think that's something to keep in mind as you're creating or teaching live and then posting it somewhere. Just remember, like, maybe they're not going to get it the first time, but you're creating a piece of content or a video or something that will live as long as you want it out there. If it's on a private platform or if you're posting on YouTube, social media, it will be out there and somebody else will come across it, or maybe the same students will go back and reference it. As long as you're framing it the right way and you're thinking about it that way, you know, this isn't a one-time done, right? You post something, you can go back and answer questions. I think that's something that also people forget about, because I know a lot of the people that we coach when we're talking with our teachers, they're like, well, now I'm on camera. And I go, yeah, guess what? That's okay. You're going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes. You can always answer the questions later. You can always go back and redo it later. You can, I mean, there's so many opportunities now that people need to learn to understand that these are just tools. You're still the teacher. The magic is still in delivering of the lesson or the education, not necessarily in what's being posted out there. And so it goes back to that relationship piece.
It does. And something I definitely like about, if you ever watch anybody that does YouTube, they'll always say, you know, I'm sure you'll all correct me in the comments below if I'm wrong. And just knowing that, like, you're welcome to that, like, you say something and maybe you get it wrong and somebody corrects you in the comments and you just go and you thank them, like, oh yeah, you're actually right. Yep. Like, you know, that was whatever. And it shows that level of engagement and that you do care. And yeah, I mean, it's a very, you know, podcasting is a very personal experience as well too. That's something that I'm sure you're finding is people are, you know, people, if you're an educator and you're putting out content that's strictly audio, you know, people listen to that and they're cleaning, folding laundry, doing stuff around their house. You know, you're engaging with people in their life. You know, you're engaging with people in their living room. And I think it was a Robin Williams quote where he was out to dinner with somebody and a guy came by and I think, you know, yelled Mork when he was on Mork and Mindy. And Robin Williams turned to the other guy and he's like, you know, I'm in their living rooms with them. Like that's how they know me. It's a very personal experience. So you're entering that space in the virtual environment. You're leaving the structured four walls of the classroom, like you said, and you're entering people's homes, you're entering their ears, you're entering wherever they are. And so that's going to be a huge component too in the relationship building.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. All right. I know you got to get back to doing extremely important things because work's going on. And you're aware, Anthony was willing to give us his lunch hour to record this today. I'm sure at some point in the future we'll have him back on if he enjoyed this experience, which I hope he does.
Yeah, I definitely did. Was there anything you really wanted to ask that I didn't touch on anything before I go?
I mean, the big thing that I think maybe at some point down the road we can touch on again is that I'd like to have you explain maybe some learning lessons in different milestones in your career, right? Because I think there are a lot of parallels between being a K-12 teacher and a parks and recreation professional. You're dealing with similar things, right? Similar barriers. You're dealing with teaching. Doesn't matter where you're at, whether you're working out in the parks and you got a group coming up to you asking you what you're doing, right? And you're riding the lawnmower, or you're literally teaching kids how to dribble the ball, or you're teaching those adults fitness. I mean, you're a teacher, right? Like, doesn't matter where you're working. What you do a lot of is teaching and education. And I think your journey is extremely valuable for a lot of the younger educators we have that listen to this, because everybody navigates the same thing, and how you've done it, I think is extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm drawing a blank on the word, but it's relatable. Right.
Yeah. It's relatable. Well, I have a story. I can share a story if you'd like. One story before
okay.
I go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a learning moment for me. So, you know, some preface on me. I was a co-host of a podcast. I did a number of episodes. I think we put out 30 episodes last year, and I probably did 10 to 12, I want to say. On a consistent basis, I am in the virtual environment doing presentations at state associations, local universities, national universities, different things. So I've spent a lot of time the past year podcasting, presenting through Zoom, you know, to the point that I don't really apply now. I'm requested, you know, like people ask me to submit because they've seen the work that I do and they find quality in it. And so the reason I'm telling you this is because the very first time I did a webinar, it was a disaster. It was terrible. No. So
we've all been there.
Yeah. I was supposed to do a conference and there was a weather event and I couldn't make it. And I said, hey, you know what? I can do this over the computer if you need me to. My presentation did not translate to virtual, like at all. Like my presentation itself was like, it was just not good. And I got the reviews back to the point that I'm embarrassed to even potentially submit a session to this association in the future, because I don't know if they would remember that and be like, so it's almost a goal of mine. And maybe one day if they ask me to come back, you know, it's kind of a mini goal, because like I would feel so weird. But, you know, I had to go through that. I had to have that. I had to have that feedback. I had to have all that stuff. And so the point is, like, don't be afraid to fail. Just put it out there. And if it's awesome, mm-hmm. fantastic. If it bombs, so what? Like, you know, as long as you gave it your best effort and you didn't like, you know, offend anybody or like say anything like out of line or something like that. Cause I'll never, you know, defend somebody saying things that are offensive. But, you know, if it was true and it was pure and you thought it was like a way to deliver and it was just a flop, then hey, what did you learn from that flop? So, it takes us all time to get there. I'm sure you've had some stories like that too, but definitely thank you for having me. It's been fantastic. I would love to come back on. It's been a great experience. I think what you're doing is amazing and I really appreciate this.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate you saying that. It's and keep in mind, it's coming from a friend. So if you're listening, you know, you can ping him. He's probably got some other stories, something. So
yeah, definitely.
But hey, thank you very much for having me or being on here. Cause I really appreciate you. You and I have stayed in touch, even though we've separated, come back together. It's been consistent.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories is when we sent you that seed packet and you texted me pictures when they started growing.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was
awesome. And I was like, cool. Anthony's the guy like that, that we're going to stay in touch. We're going to find a way because it's tough. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule today. So thank you very much, Anthony. And if you're listening again, I'm going to go to anthonyinparts.com. Look at his website, follow him. Super smart individual who's trying new things, who's challenging process, who's challenging the way things have always been done and trying to make things better constantly. I know it's an uphill battle sometimes, but the reward on the back end is very worth it. And Anthony's an illustration of one of those stories. So thanks again for listening. This is the Be Educated Show. I'm Brad James, and you can always find us at thebeeducatedshow.com. And we'll see you on the next one. Take care.